Blog Talk Radio.
March 1st. On this day, Frédéric Chopin was born in Warsaw, Poland, and he moved to France, got involved with George Sand, who was a woman, who was an author, and they were lovers. Chopin was one of the greatest pianists in history. I wrote many sonatas, very difficult to play. I had trouble with them when I was studying piano. And he had a tempestuous wife. He died at a relatively young age for a composer. But probably his most famous piece, and a lot of people don't know the origin of this piece, is what is known as the Funeral March. It's actually the third movement of a four-movement sonata. And the origin of this thing was that Chopin was having delusions, nightmares and everything, and he... was at a friend's house, and they decided to put a skeleton at a piano, and Chopin sat down at the piano and improvised this third movement, which has become known as the Funeral March, which is played at state funerals. I think the last time it was played at a state funeral was that of John F. Kennedy, the end of November 1963. Now, there are a lot of versions of this, the piano version, the band version, the orchestral version. We're going to play excerpts from our archives of both. The first one is a French Army band excerpt version, and here it is. This is what you usually hear at a military funeral and also like a state funeral, like John F. Kennedy.
Thank you.
Now, here is the orchestral version orchestrated by Sir Edward Elgar. This you would hear, you know, at a symphony concert or even at a public memorial, but generally wouldn't hear it at a parade funeral. This is an excerpt. Excerpts from this Chopin's Funeral March has been used in comedies and parodies and all that, but it actually started the origin, and very few people know this, that it was kind of a fluky thing that Chopin composed at the piano, improvised as part of his four-part sonata, piano sonata. So there it is. Among the other birthdays today, the great sculptor, you see his stuff, Auguste Saint Gaudens, born today. The woman who was the first mayor voted in representing the Prohibition Party, Susanna Salter. The first black woman to become a medical doctor in 1864 was Rebecca Lee. She was not related to General Robert E. Lee. And one of the English writers who was part of the gay lifestyle in England, Lytton Strachey, one of the great, probably the greatest Greek orchestra and opera conductor, Dimitri Mitropoulos, who conducted the New York Philharmonic, he was gay. One of the great jazz band, I think it was a trombone player, Leon Bix Bickerly, born in Iowa, birthday today. Glenn Miller's birthday today. We'll play something next week on him. And then, of course, David Niven. Now, David Niven went to school at Sandhurst, the British version of West Point, and his fellow classmate was Brigadier Francis Ingle. And I'm trying to get, here, we'll play a little excerpt here from, that's General Berrigan, General Ingle. And, of course, Ingle served in the Bengal Lancers as the last commanding general, and also served in World War II. Now, David Niven left the British Army, came to America, got involved in films, and when World War II broke out, he went back to Britain and was mustered in as a lieutenant. But here is General Ingle, David Niven was with Errol Flynn in the first version of the Charge of the Light Brigade, which dealt with Afghanistan and India, of course, and the Russians. And here's a little excerpt from General Ingle, who was talking about Afghanistan.
I'm interviewing one of my old friends, one of the last great generals of the past, Brigadier Ingalls, the last commanding general of the Bengal Lancers. Welcome, General. How are you?
Oh, no, don't go. I'm fine, thank you very much. Nice to see you again. What are all the leading questions you're going to ask me?
Well, the first question, Brigadier, would be, what effect do you think does the Russian defeat and withdrawal from the subcontinent, what would that have on the current situation? How would that change?
On whose situation?
For Pakistan and India.
Well, I think it's to the advantage of both of these countries that they should remove their physical presence from Afghanistan. As you know, for many hundreds of years, the Russians have wanted to obtain a warm water port down on the Arabian Sea, or the Indian Ocean, as the Indians call it. But the British, of course, resisted that for many generations. And I would say that the situation could only improve as far as Pakistan and India were concerned. It's one less threat to their territorial integrity. And, of course, we're all hopeful that Afghanistan will find a government of her own choosing that is satisfactory to the people of Afghanistan, and they begin to put their lives together and repair all the damages that have been done in these 7 or 8 years of war, and that they become successful, and we have a neighbor who is economically sound and basically friendly.
General, the reference you made was the Russians seeking a warm water port. Were you referring to the Crimean War?
Well, that was partly something to do with it, but really what I was thinking of, the British had, I think it was 3 or 4 wars with the Afghans. And the Russians were behind each of them, so they say, or so history says. And it was really to keep Afghanistan under the thumb of British policy that those wars were fought. One or two of them were disasters, in fact.
General, one of the claims that the...
Now, he didn't get into Niven in this interview, but we'll play that probably next week. Among the other deaths today, Leo the VIII. Now, he was an anti-pope. This is relevant because all the media is focusing on the popes and... got this interference here. That's St. Jerome. on the papacy, and of course of all the religions, even though I'm biased as a Roman Catholic and conservative, that the Catholic Church is the most interesting of all the religions, because there's been intrigues, murders, political manipulations, popes throwing their weight around and trying to influence things, and popes getting people getting elected through all kinds of manipulation, fraud, deceit, threats, and bribery, that sort of thing, such as the Borgias. Next week we're going to probably have excerpts and films, part of our educational series, of how the popes were depicted in some of the films, such as the Borgias, which is the most recent, and how Alexander VI, how he got to be pope, and all the things that went on. And then his successor was an Italian. Borgia was Spanish family. His successor was an Italian who helped, probably was responsible for building St. Peter's, the world's largest church. And then, of course, we had the popes who had such authority and influence, they were able to excommunicate or threaten with excommunication and make it stick to Catholic monarchs when these monarchs were adherents of the Roman Catholic Church. Henry VIII said, in effect, you know where you can go, I'm going to set myself up as the head of the church in England. And, of course, the Anglican Church has got many, just of all of the Roman Catholic Church's doctrines and services and all that sort of thing. And, of course, the interesting thing is whenever a monarch is crowned, the last one being Elizabeth, one of the lines in the coronation ceremony is the defender of the faith. Now, that came when Henry VIII was still a good Catholic, and he was brilliant. He wrote a defense of the Roman Catholic faith when Luther was trashing the Roman Catholic Church. Luther was a monk who had kindly put it this way, that he went astray and left the church, married a nun. And Henry VIII wrote this beautiful, very eloquent, powerful treatise, and the Pope gave him the title Defender of the Faith. And what it really means is Defender of the Catholic Faith, not what they use today in the next monarch that will be crowned in England, probably William. I don't think Charles is going to get it. Well, that will probably be in the coronation ceremony. So, but we've had anti-popes, we've had popes, what was known as the Avignon captivity, where the French kings decided, well, they're going to put the Pope under their thumb and capture the Pope and bring him to a gilded prison at Avignon. Finally, a saint named Saint Teresa told the Pope, you got to go back to Rome, and to hell with this king. He has temporal powers, but you have spiritual powers. God is on your side, in effect. So that's what happened in that. And we've had popes who disputed the pope who was elected, and they're called anti-popes, and this Leo VIII was one of them. We've also had a couple of popes at the same time. Now, there's a claim that there was a female pope, but that's big speculation, to say the least. Among the other deaths today was an interesting name. It's the name of a law firm here in San Francisco, as a matter of fact, a guy named Jay Borgard. He was a Nazi collaborator during World War II. We don't know too much about him, and we'll get into that because it has relevance to a case that's going on here in the California courts. A great French composer and conductor who succeeded Fritz Reiner of the Chicago Symphony. I met him. Jean Martineau, he didn't live that long. I think he died at age in his 60s. Dolores Costello, actress, died today. And then if you ever use the Polaroid camera, if you ever bought one, Edwin Land died on this day. So those are the interesting, it was a short list today. Now, we're getting back to the horse meat scandal, and it's what's going on is, IKEA has stopped offering meatballs for their cheap lunches, and of course we don't know what was in the meat even before this scandal broke. There's a word coming out of South Africa that buffalo, goat, and other animals were used substitute for what was being sold as beef. So the issue is, can you really trust the labeling? And, of course, ABC here in San Francisco KGO TV ran a series on this meat glue that these expensive restaurants have been, and some of the meat markets have been gluing parts of beef together or whatever passes as beef and passing it off as prime rib and all of that. There's always been these scandals about expensive restaurants offering expensive meals, and I think it was a real journalist who went into the garbage of some of these restaurants and found that it was frozen dinners, but yet they were charging like $60 for these, what were in reality, frozen dinners. I'm hearing that a lot of the fish that's being offered may not be what the label, what they're selling, what they put on the fish as the labeling, and charging high prices, like for halibut, it may not be halibut. So the question is, can we trust the labeling? And then, of course, what is our military getting? Are they being swindled also, and the American taxpayer? Excuse me. So these are public policy issues. Now, I'm hearing more and more complaints about this bicycle political agenda that people, and we've heard stories going on in Portland, how the people are getting tired of the bicyclists who have a political clout, but they have representation without taxation. They are not paying taxes except for the initial purchase of the bike, the sales tax. They're not paying for these lanes, which cost about $33,000 per mile. They're not paying for maintenance. They don't pay for parking. They don't pay for police services. If they hit somebody, it's the person, the victim, better have insurance, or the taxpayers pay for them. There's no liability insurance. There's no licensing. These bicyclists are as bad as some of these yuppie SUV drivers. They're on the cell phones. They're texting. They ignore the traffic laws. They run down people. They have attitude. They flip you the bird when you call them. They don't have safety devices on these bikes. And it used to be the drug dealers were the big users of bicycles because the cops couldn't catch them when these people were making their drug deliveries. And, of course, this whole issue that one of the big frauds is bicycles do not contribute to the economy. We are not talking about the bicycle messengers who work very hard and make very little money. We're talking about the latte leisure class who want special rights and privileges and exemptions without having any responsibility. Also, the fact is, you know, 50 years ago, we laughed at the Chinese and their coolie economy and their bicyclists. Now these people are manufacturing expensive cars, Mercedes, BMW, Saabs, and we're going the direction that they were at 50 years ago, a coolie economy. So we, you know, people need to look at this and stand up to these bicycle bullies and their political agenda and say enough is enough. You're going to be held responsible. And there are very few cities in this country that try to enforce bicycle safety and bicyclists held to accountable when they put their wheels on the road. They abide the rules of the road. Davis, California is one of these places, and we need to spread this around the country that you are going to be held accountable, otherwise your bike comes off the road and you can walk or take public transportation. On our upcoming show, we're working with Patrick Butler, who is Illinois' premier political journalist. We jokingly say that he knows where many of the bodies are buried, who buried them, why they were buried, and who may be next. He's got a book coming out on Chicago's history. I think the Ravenswood District of Chicago, quite interesting. And Patrick and I used to date a descendant of Mary Todd's family. There was insanity and mental instability in that family. And it's quite interesting. He's an expert on Lincoln. And we will get into some new revelations that Lincoln may not have been assassinated by John Wilkes Booth. There's some information in the Library of Congress, a National Archivist, has been researching this, and it's come out. It's going to destroy all of the theories that in the history that's gone, you know, for 100 years, that John Wilkes Booth assassinated Abraham Lincoln and that Dr. Mudd was innocent. You know, he went to Tortugas and was sentenced excuse me, for assisting John Wilkes Booth try to evade capture by the Union Army, who was after him, and were going to hang him if they caught him. But he ended up being either shot or committed suicide in that barn, in which they set on fire. So we'll be back Monday, and we will be, hopefully we'll have that interview together. We have some new equipment, and it should work. So we're going to end with our usual theory and politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
We'll be back Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Stay warm if you're dealing with the snow. It's March. March came in like a lion and supposed to leave like a lamb. Have a safe, warm weekend. Good night. And go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We should have some new videos up there. That's AmiCusVeritas. Good night.